why don't you, and so on. This sort of thing has been going on for centuries and caused a number of major battles which have left large tracts of land uninhabitable because of magic harmonics. In fact, the hero, even at this moment galloping towards the vortex planes, didn't get involved in this kind of argument because they didn't take it seriously, but mainly because this particular hero was a heroine, a red-headed one. Now, there is a tendency at a point like this to look over one's shoulder at the cover artist and start going on at length about leather, thigh boots and naked blades. Words like full, round and even pert creep into the narrative until the writer has to go and have a cold shower and a lie down, which is all rather silly, because any woman setting out to make a living by the sword isn't about to go around looking like something off the cover of the more advanced kind of lingerie catalogue for the specialised buyer. Oh well, all right. The point that must be made is that although Herenna, the henna-haired harridan, would look quite stunning after a good bath, a heavy-duty manicure, and the pick of the leather axe in Wu Hun Ling's Oriental Exotica and Martial Aids on Heroes Street, she was currently quite sensibly dressed in light chainmail, soft boots, and a short sword. All right, maybe the boots were leather, but not black. Riding with her were a number of swarthy men that will certainly be killed before too long anyway, so a description is probably not essential. There was absolutely nothing pert about any of them. Look, they can wear leather if you like. Herenna wasn't too happy about them, but they were all that was available for hire in Morpork. Many of the citizens were moving out and heading for the hills out of fear of the new star. But Herenna was heading for the hills for a different reason. Just turnwise and rimwards of the plains were the bare Trollbone Mountains. Herenna, who had for many years availed herself of the uniquely equal opportunities available to any woman who could make a sword sing, was trusting to her instincts. This Rincewind, as Trumon had described him, was a rat, and rats like cover. Anyway, the mountains were a long way from Trumon, and for all that he was currently her employer. Herenna was very happy about that. There was something about his manner that made her fists itch. Rincewind knew he ought to be panicking, but that was difficult because although he wasn't aware of it, emotions like panic and terror and anger are all to do with stuff sloshing around in glands, and all Rincewind's glands were still in his body. It was difficult to be certain where his real body was, but when he looked down he could see a fine blue line trailing from what, for the sake of sanity, he would still call his ankle, into the blackness around him. And it seemed reasonable to assume that his body was on the other end. It was not a particularly good body, he'd be the first to admit, but one or two bits of it had sentimental value, and it dawned on him that if the little blue line snapped, he'd have to spend the rest of his life, his existence, hanging around Ouija boards, pretending to be people's dead aunties, and all the other things lost souls do to pass the time. The sheer horror of this so appalled him he hardly felt his feet touch the ground. Some ground, anyway. He decided that it almost certainly wasn't the ground, which, as far as he could remember, wasn't black and didn't swirl in such a disconcerting way. He took a look around. Sheer, sharp mountains speared up around him into a frosty sky hung with cruel stars, stars which appeared on no celestial chart in the multiverse, but right there in amongst them was a malevolent red disk. Rincewind shivered and looked away. The land ahead of him sloped down sharply, and a dry wind whispered across the frost-cracked rocks. It really did whisper. As grey eddies caught at his robe and tugged at his hair, Rincewind thought he could hear voices, faint and far off, saying things like, "Are you sure those were mushrooms in the stew? I feel a bit..." And, "There's a lovely view if you lean over this..." And, "Don't fuss, it's only a scratch." And, "Watch where you're pointing that bow, you nearly..." And so on. He stumbled down the slope with his fingers in his ears until he saw a sight seen by very few living men. The ground dipped sharply until it became a vast funnel, fully a mile across, into which the whispering wind of the souls of the dead blew with a vast echoing susurration, as though the disk itself was breathing. But a narrow spur of rock arched out and over the hole, ending in an outcrop perhaps 100 feet across. There was a garden up there, with orchards and flower beds, and a quite small black cottage. A little path led up to it. Rincewind looked behind him. The shiny blue line was